Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, joined as always by my great friend and longtime college football analyst, Brent Beard, most recently of First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, as you know by now, I'm sure you know this, right? Brent, also a voter.
That's right.
The most prestigious honor in all of collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. And boy, it's another one of those weekends, Brent, coming up in the Southeastern Conference. And as what we typically do here on the program, we'll review as we preview. We'll talk a little bit about last Saturday, and we'll preview the upcoming Saturday, which is certainly a little bit more loaded in the three primary television windows, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really amazing now. And look, this is all going on before we add the ninth SEC game for next year. I mean, look, the reality is now for the league is, I'm not saying you've got seven, but you've at least got what, Trav, five, six games that are instrumental in carving out the next few weeks and months. So, and I can tell you, not every conference can say that.
And think about it this way too. What if you didn't have the double bye?
Yeah.
Think about if these are gauntlets
right
in October. I saw Dan Orlovsky does, I think, a really good job on ESPN, mostly NFL coverage. Saw him today, I think, on social media, and he was specifically talking about this run that South Carolina is about to go through from a schedule perspective. And he's right. I mean, it is, especially for a team, a program like South Carolina, it is going to be a lot. But look, that's where we're at right now in Southeastern Conference football, especially when you mix in the Oklahomas and the Texases. That alone makes it, I think, feel like nine games already with those two schools coming in.
It does. And look, but to your point for South Carolina, I mean, you're talking about at LSU, Oklahoma, Alabama, at Ole Miss, and at Texas A&M in a row. In a row.
Yeah, top 10-ish teams in a row. LSU just outside of that top 10, I guess. But, you know, look, we've talked about some other teams that are going through this. Florida has already kind of gone through it. And it looks like maybe Billy Napier is on that job survival tour once again. After that win last Saturday over the Texas Longhorns in Gainesville. But for their reward, they get to go on the road against a top five type team in Texas A&M this week. Alabama's reward for beating Georgia and Vanderbilt back to back is that they get to go face a top 15 team on the road in Como this weekend. So it's not specific to any one team, although I think Dan's point specifically to South Carolina is a good one. Hey, Brent, we've got the live viewers checking in. We always appreciate that. Deborah Ferguson offers up a good evening. Thank you, Deborah. We appreciate it. Tex Titer chiming in says, "Yo, TR, how's Duval doing?" I was at that Jaguars Chiefs game last night. I feel like I just got home 10 minutes
ago. Yeah, you almost did, didn't you?
Oh my gosh. If there was ever a field rush game in the NFL, it probably would have been that one last night.
It was
semi deserving of it with the way that game ended. That was so Jaguars the way that game ended. With the winning touchdown by Trevor Lawrence after he fell down twice and got up and scored. But a crazy night in Duval. Yes, Tex, I would say the city of Jacksonville is probably still slightly inebriated as a town. But we're here to talk college football, as you know. And, Brent, we're not going to waste a lot of time getting into this weekend's matchup. And, again, we'll talk about kind of how we got here from last Saturday's action, although it was abbreviated across the Southeastern Conference. One team we saw last weekend was the Alabama Crimson Tide. Alabama, Brent, your thoughts after a little bit of a stumbling start there, and the run defense failed once again early. But, boy, from the start of the second quarter on, the Crimson Tide did everything it needed to do, outscored Vanderbilt 30-7. down the stretch or over those final three quarters. Ty Simpson, once again, doing some really good things. But that defense, too, opportunistic, takes the football away, and really did it this time in some big, big moments against Diego Pavia.
Yeah, Simpson, 340 yards, couple touchdowns, 15 of his completions for at least 10 yards. I mean, in one series, he completed 13 yards, 10 yards, 17 yards, and 13 yards, and 27 yards.
Yeah.
That says a lot right there. Bama, compared to, you remember last year, Trav, in this game, Vandy winning 40-35. Bama controlled the ball for nearly 37 and a half minutes, 7 of 15 on third down. So, and it was kind of a tale of two halves, and Bama truly controlled that second half, and Vanderbilt ran out of time toward at the end without a whole lot to say about it.
Yeah, Alabama flipped the script on Vandy. A lot of the stats from the game in Nashville a year ago were tilted towards Alabama. Jam Miller coming on with that run game, that's a revelation, I think. That's another additional concern for Missouri this week on that side of the football. Look, you got to play respectful of the explosive play capability of this Alabama passing game, which you outlined with those chunk pass plays. But in doing so, you know, Alabama should be able to run the football against these softer coverages and these deeper safeties and these teams that are going to be more and more aware or concerned about those explosive plays from Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard and Isaiah Horton and even Josh Cuevas, the tight end now, is getting involved in that. Well, what we saw last Saturday against Vanderbilt was Jam Miller do what a lot of people thought he might be able to do from the start of the season. Of course, he had the collarbone issue. He wasn't able to do that. But I think that's going to be an interesting part of this matchup Saturday, too, with Missouri, Brent, is because Ahmad Hardy is coming into this thing, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a nation's leading rusher.
Yeah, absolutely. And
so he's deserving of all the accolades and talk that he's going to get this week. I think Jam Miller's going to go into Como feeling like, don't forget about me. And also his offensive line is probably going to feel that way a little bit too.
Yeah. I would agree. Hardy, by the way, is no stranger to big years. I mean, he had 1,300 yards last year. But Trav, do people know who he was last year?
Not at ULM. They did not. But he transfers over from Louisiana Monroe, and now everyone is becoming acquainted with Ahmad Hardy. And it's not just him either. I mean, Jamal Roberts.
Yep.
He's a top 10 rusher in the SEC.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? And both of these guys are averaging more than 7 yards per carry. Now, here's where we ask the question, what do we really know about Missouri football at this point? We know they had a nice win over South Carolina. Of course, that was a South Carolina team coming off a blowout loss at home to Vanderbilt. And Lenore Sellers may or may not have been what South Carolina would have liked to him to have been coming off a concussion. But, you know, all the kudos in the world to Eli Drinkwitz and how they've revamped that offense because they lost some big time production at the quarterback position in the backfield. Wide receiver, the two guys, Burden and Weiss, last year were a real problem. Well, they get Kevin Coleman over from Mississippi State. Marquise Johnson is a 15 yards per catch kind of guy. And the tight end, Brett Norfleet. Alabama fans, this is a big weekend for watch the tight end guy. You know how you go to games, Brent, and there's always that one guy before the snap that says, watch the tight end, watch the tight end. That's Brett Norfleet. He has 20 catches on the season. Four of those have gone for touchdowns.
Well, and now, you know, look, I think Missouri is a really good team. They're 5-0. They're in the top five nationally in total offense, 547 yards per game. What really has impressed me is they nearly rushed for 300 a game, which is a mouthful, frankly. But we've got to keep in mind, as you would call out at some point, every time we bring up games like this, who has Missouri played? And they played UMass and Louisville and Kansas at this point. So I think the reality is, Trav, to their credit, you still got to be 5-0, but the competition for Missouri, as much as I like Eli, and he's certainly rumored for that Florida job if Billy loses that job.
Billy's not ready. Billy's not ready yet.
He's not ready. He's not. I agree with that. But at the same time, Trav, isn't it fair to look at who Missouri has played?
Sure.
Or maybe at this point not played, right?
Yeah, and look, got a win over Kansas. That was nice, but was down 21-6 in that game.
Yeah.
Was down to South Carolina in the latter stages of that matchup with the Gamecocks. So I think Bo Prabula, the quarterback for Missouri, he's completing 75% of his passes, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. The key for him is going to be to take care of the football first and foremost, because again, Alabama will take it away from you.
Yes.
And that killed Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores in the red zone last week. Alabama's feeling it. Conversely, not a lot of people talking about Missouri's defense, because we really haven't seen it stressed by an offense like what Alabama's going to put out there Saturday. But the Missouri Tigers have yet to give up 300 total yards in a game so far this season. So this is a totally different dynamic. Alabama, I like, because they've been forged a little bit more. They've been in the heat, in the fire, so to speak. You know, maybe this is Missouri's, you know, big moment on the big stage, but it's kind of like Texas last week. I mean, it's going to be the middle of October, and we're just now going to find out something, it feels like, about this Missouri team, Brent.
Well, and Tram, the other thing is Missouri, their first game on the road, October 18th. I mean, that's unbelievable to have 6 games at home before you're on the road. Trev, I tell you this the new SEC schedule starting next year, I'm pretty sure that won't happen again.
Oh, geez. Alabama in this series has absolutely hammered Missouri in the last 6 meetings.
And they did
here's a little Pops trivia for you. I know we usually wait till later in this show. First time Alabama and Missouri ever met on a football field was in Duval, 1968 Gator Bowl, December the 28th. One day before that, across the St. John's River, yours truly made his worldly, earthly debut.
Yeah.
The next day, one day after I'm birthed at Baptist Hospital on the banks of the St. John's River, Pops is at Bama, Missouri.
Yeah.
That didn't go over well with the in-laws, as you might expect.
But Pops
said, the boys said, we're going. So,
And
that was Missouri. That was a Missouri win. But, man, these last 6 games, Brent, Alabama hasn't just beaten Missouri like last year. Just dropped the hammer on the Tigers.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and Trev, I remember 1975 and Tony Galbraith, who ran all over Alabama. Bama opened the season playing Missouri, and it was frankly a big mistake because Missouri won that game easily. Bama rebounded and got the national championship picture before it's over. But at the same point, to your point, been an interesting series between these two teams.
Ed chiming here in the show chat says you got to increase Caden Proctor's carries as well. So not just Jam Miller that Ed thinks needs to get his workload sustained here after getting 22 totes against Vanderbilt last week. Ed wants more Caden Proctor. Why not? Right. Last two games.
Yeah.
The big offensive tackle with a touch and first downs on both of those touches. So we appreciate it, Ed. A lot of fun. No doubt about it. What about this for an interesting non-con in the middle of October? You got Washington State coming down from Pullman to take on number 4 Ole Miss in Oxford.
Yeah.
Ole Miss, a 32.5-point favorite. Now, Ole Miss is legitimately a top, I think, 5-18.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. But,
man, this the dissolving of the old Pac-12, it is just killed Washington State and Oregon State, the two teams that got left out of that deal, boy, It is not good. But Ole Miss right here gets a little bit of a breather, or so you would think, Brent. And the quarterback situation at Ole Miss has been very fascinating. Are they just going to ride with what it's been here of late, you think?
Yeah. Or, yeah. I think they are. I think they are. They are very happy right now with what they've got in Trinidad Chambliss.
Yeah.
And again, here's a guy that, to his credit, I mean, Trav, he has come in and just played, frankly, lights out. And I get the fact – now, again, you got to remember who you're dealing with here. I get the fact that Austin Simmons is original starter, but yeah, when you've had Chambliss play as well as he has, that's a different story. Now, something you mentioned that bears repeating, things really ramp up for Ole Miss at Georgia, at Oklahoma, South Carolina, Florida, and Mississippi State. So, Trav, after Washington State, at Georgia and at Oklahoma, two crucial games for Ole Miss this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And Washington State's kind of been all over the road. Gave up 59 in an Apple Cup matchup with Washington a couple of weeks ago. On the Palouse, gave up 59. Mm-hmm. And then gave up 59 on the road to a really good North Texas team.
Yeah.
Back-to-back weeks, Washington State gave up 59s. And then sandwiched around the 59s, a couple wins.
Yeah.
Beat San Diego State, beat Colorado State. Mm-hmm. That Mountain West sort of affiliation I think you've got now for Washington State and Oregon State showing up from a schedule perspective should be an easy Ole Miss win. I mean, if you've got North Texas and Washington scoring at that clip, you got to think Charlie Weiss Jr. and Lane are going to do their thing against the Cougars. Let's keep it moving here in the 3:30 window. A lot of intrigue about this matchup. Anytime these two get together, Oklahoma, sixth ranked, taking on the Texas Longhorns. Texas, surprisingly or not, actually the favorite in this game. I guess with the uncertainty at quarterback for Oklahoma, though, that's where that makes plenty of sense for Texas, even after a disappointing performance against the Florida Gators on the road last week, Brent, to be a slight favorite heading into this one.
Well, and the thing we don't know yet is, will John Mateer play? There's talk about that. Obviously, he's coming off hand surgery. I guess anything's possible with the medical attention that we've got right now. Now, Hawkins has come in and kind of replaced him and played some. Look, Oklahoma, I think, is the better of the two defenses. And if Mateer doesn't play, I would almost go with the Sooner defense. I'm curious, Trav, what you've seen with Texas. Now, Texas lost to Florida. And, man alive, can you imagine – Texas with three losses this early in the season if they lose this game. But, you know, the interesting thing about it with this too, it just the fact that Texas is struggling to me along the line of scrimmage. I'm curious what you've seen with them. I think everybody loves Arch, but Arch has had his share of struggles too, frankly. And Trav, what I've heard from people is Arch is trying to go in a kind of a straight drop back kind of offense when he really does better when he rolls out either left or right and kind of throwing the ball on the run. I'm curious what you've seen with that, but there are so many questions in this game between what Texas has done and not done and will Mateer play, that makes it pretty fascinating.
It does. I could see that with Arch. He seems very comfortable on the move. I mean, he likes extending plays. He likes getting out of the pocket. I thought Arch against Florida was better than pretty much the rest of his teammates. And I know he turned the ball over a couple of times, but he was getting hit what was he sacked, six times?
Yeah, he was. Yes.
I mean, Texas's offensive line had no chance. Thank goodness for Texas. No, thank goodness for Arch that Caleb Banks didn't play in that game.
Really?
Because Gums and Sapp and the rest of those guys for Florida were it four-man rush. Mm-hmm. They weren't even really bringing pressure. Now, I thought Florida did a nice job in what gave Arch and Orr that protection schemes a lot of trouble. They brought the simulated pressures where they brought a DB a lot. Mm-hmm. But they brought a DB as the fourth guy from what I saw. They weren't bringing a DB as a fifth guy. They weren't blitzing with the extra guy. So I thought Arch impressed me as much as he has at any point this season late in that game when it looked like it was over and he was still he wasn't going down with the ship or just rolling over. So I liked what I saw from him. Yeah, that offensive line just isn't good enough. It's not good enough running the football.
No, it's not, is it?
Arch led him in rushing again. He was sacked six times, and sacks come off your rushing tuttle.
They
tuttle,
do.
And
they
he still do. Led Texas in rushing.
Amazing.
I mean, Wisner's dealing with that hamstring. It, you know, he had a couple of bright spots in the game, but he's not totally healthy. CJ Baxter isn't, you know, where he needs to be. Yeah, and then the surprising thing to me for Texas in that game was they did defensively. They got handled. Now, we'll talk about this in relation to Florida coming up here in a little bit. We preview the Gators and the Aggies. But to your point, yeah, the Oklahoma defense to this point, you feel like they can trust it. And how many times did Oklahoma sack Jackson Arnold?
Yes. Absolutely.
You think that defense isn't looking forward to Saturday at the Cotton Bowl? But if Mateer doesn't play, I don't have enough trust in Hawkins. I know he did some nice enough things against Kent State last Saturday, but there were a couple plays where it was just like, you know, you watch some things Hawkins does against teams like Kent State and you say, that's not going to work against a legit SEC team. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going Texas. Mateer plays. I reserve the right before kickoff to change my mind. What about you, Brent?
Yeah, well, yeah, I would agree with that. Trav, the thing that really concerns me more than anything else for Texas is giving up 457 yards to a Florida offense, Trav, that we've seen that I don't know if the word inept is strong enough for what they played at times. But to their credit, they certainly got it together. But look, anybody expecting this Texas team – to go ahead and win the SEC and be in the national championship race, it doesn't quite look that way early on, does it?
Yeah, and the connection with the receivers, like Wingo for Texas, it was a little bit better against Florida, but it just hasn't been really what I thought it would be. I mean, because, you know, again, Arch isn't, you know, he isn't a first-year guy or a second-year guy.
Right, really.
He's been around with these guys for a couple of years. And Parker Livingstone's the guy he really likes. He made a hell of a catch against Florida. I thought he blew his ACL out. Apparently, it wasn't that serious. And they're hopeful that he'll be able to – Parker Livingstone will be able to go, the 6'4 wide receiver who leads the Longhorns in receiving yards, averaging 21.5 per catch. So, in terms of explosive plays, that's been it. Now, look, Wingo still leads Texas in receptions with 17, and he's got a team-high four touchdowns. I just thought – through five games, that connection would be a little bit more prolific than it's been at this point. Yes. But I for the Texas offense, I think it goes back to that front as much as it does anything else.
Agreed.
What about at 4:15 Eastern on Saturday, Brent? Arkansas with Bobby Petrino headed to Knoxville to take on the Vols. You talk about hold my beer and watch this potential between Petrino and Heupel, two offensive masterminds. Mm-hmm. Hold on to your hats. Although, you know, with Heupel, it's fast and it's a high number of snaps is the goal, but I don't think it's overly complex. What are you thinking with Petrino? I saw where Petrino said the adjustment he was going to have to make was being down on the field because he had gone up into the box so they could keep him away from the officials. Like he said that. So now he's going to be back down on the field, and the officials, I'm sure, will know it quickly.
Trav, do you think that comment made the commissioner's office by chance? I just wonder. I'm just wondering if there may have been a note or maybe a voicemail from the commissioner's office at some point this week about that. So, but Tennessee averaging 41 points, SEC play. Joey Aguilar's averaging basically 300 yards a game, which is fascinating. And again, as you and I talked last week, Petrino last Monday basically hiring and firing is what it amounts to. It went in the interim to that, in my opinion. Tennessee off last week after a big win against Mississippi State on there. But I, you know, the game being at Tennessee, I do think Tennessee wins. But look, Trav, Petrino knows that he's got a certain amount of games to kind of show people that he could be the next head coach. Look, would it surprise you if they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at Tennessee at some point?
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, now that he has full reins of that thing, and you know, Taylen Green's capable of producing some big plays. This Tennessee defense at times can be suspect to that. They're very aggressive. Petrino has some stuff in the bag to combat that, whether it's throwbacks, whether it's screen game, things like that. Bobby's going to have all that ready for the Vols. And Aguilar, I wanted to ask you about, because his last two SEC games, he's thrown four picks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in two seasons at Appalachian State, Brent, he threw 24 interceptions.
Sure did, yes.
So you start to wonder if there's some concern there moving forward. But this Arkansas defense, and I know Bobby went in and just blew it all up pretty much after he was handed the interim keys. But I just don't think this Arkansas defense can capitalize on that enough. Yeah. Now, Green, Taylen Green, and that offense goes in there and lights it up. Maybe they win a shootout type of game, but I think that's probably what it's going to have to be on Saturday for the Arkansas Razorbacks. Also, in that primetime window Saturday night, we just talked about the Florida Gators. Dallas Wilson, what about the impact of the true freshman wide receiver, Brent? Is he this year's DJ Lagway for Billy Napier?
Yeah.
What Lagway and that improving defense did over the second half of last season, could Dallas Wilson make that type of impact with a defense that looked rejuvenated? That Florida team looked so much crisper.
It really did.
In every facet of play, even got the job done on special teams, right? With a block punt. So is Billy Napier going to do this again, Brent?
Well, the reality of it is, and to your point, Lagway 21 of 28 for 300 yards. Jaden Baugh, who hadn't been talked about enough, gets 107. And Dallas Wilson, 7 catches for 111 yards. I mean, he really looked tremendous in a lot of ways. So kudos to Florida for being able to kind of resurrect themselves. But Trav, this A&M team has been a resurrection, frankly. I mean, their defense on third and fourth down in SEC play, my stars, I don't know if I've ever seen this, 1 for 25.
Yeah.
That's 4%, frankly. They, you know, and A&M winning close games in Notre Dame and Auburn, that certainly helps them along the way, and won 3 straight games, too. But again, big, big game in a lot of ways. Now, obviously, they've got LSU coming up at the end of October, right before Halloween. But I will say this: this A&M defense is stout, is it not?
Yeah, it's Wrecking Crew like.
Yeah, it is. Isn't
going back
it?
In the day, and you know what? They do it the Elko way. I mean, Elko's a defensive guy. They're physical. Their front seven will flat out get after you. So that's where you go back to having concern for DJ Lagway all over again, because I think A&M can do that. Although, you talk about blueprints and what we saw from even A&M, it was methodical. It wasn't pretty always against Mississippi State last Saturday night, but I think that's exactly the recipe, the formula in that game that Elko wants to employ on a weekly basis. And I think for Florida against Texas, that was the recipe. And it it really had to do with that offensive line playing at a high level. Ball doing his thing. You got a true freshman in Clark that we saw, I guess, at the running back position for Florida because they've had some injuries there. And then you incorporate a legit outside guy like Dallas Wilson, and it seemed to boost Lagway's confidence or even his energy. And when you get off to a good start, it doesn't hurt. And Florida hadn't done that enough this season either.
Well, and I tell you, what's interesting is, too, with the schedule, they've got Florida at home. They're at Arkansas. That's certainly winnable. As we mentioned, they've got a big game with LSU and then at Missouri. And then South Carolina, Samford, and then Texas. Trev, that, you know, A&M's been your epitome of 8-4 over the last few years. This team has the potential to be a lot better than 8-4 this year.
Couple of Texas high school quarterback, not legends, but Lagway was up there. He certainly was. So sure. Marcel Reed is not going to be talked about at all going into this game. Yes. But he's going to be huge throwing the football. Casey Concepcion, Dallas Wilson at the wide receiver positions for A&M and Florida. I think this is going to be a tight football game.
I agree.
If Florida's front seven shows up again this week like it did last week, which I have no reason to think it won't, and the offensive line plays at the level it did against Texas, Florida, like was the case at LSU and even at Miami, is going to have a chance late. I don't know if Florida's going to win this game, but I think they're going to cover the 7.5 that they're going to get from A&M.
Well, and just say real quick, Florida afterwards, Mississippi State, the huge game with Georgia. Then they've still got Ole Miss and Tennessee. So a big win for that Gator coaching staff, but they're far from done the season.
Yeah, it's tough for Florida fans right now. They're in that sort of purgatory. Yeah,
they are.
I mean, you're going to pull for your team, man.
Yeah, sure.
If you're going to go to Gainesville and it's Texas on the other side, you're going to pull for your team. But then there's that reality of every one of these wins now.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Houdini is going to do what he did a year ago. Hey, let's talk about Georgia at Auburn. Talk about a rivalry. You talk about a series that has been around forever. Brent, the Dogs going to travel to Jordan-Hare. That's a primetime kickoff on ABC. Georgia coming off a much-needed win over the Kentucky Wildcats. That game, to me, Brent, went about the way I expected. I think that line was 20.5.
Yeah.
Georgia won by 21. Georgia pretty much controlled the game throughout. There were a couple of things that still gave you pause where this Georgia team is concerned. I liked that Gunnar Stockton seemed more decisive and aggressive and willing to take some shots and some, you know, tight windows and things like that. Now, he threw a pick there in the first half. That wasn't his best offering. But then, you know, Chauncey Bowens continues to come on at the running back position for the Dogs. Defensively, not much in the way of what I would call star power on that side of the ball for this Georgia defense. Got ripped by a tight end in the middle of the field for a touchdown. I think Georgia is a good football team. I think Georgia is in the type of situation, even with Auburn's struggles and coming off a bye week, it's sort of all alert for Georgia this week on the road at Auburn.
Trav, how about Auburn has not beaten Georgia since 2017?
Yep. That ended up being Gus's one of his downfalls late when they made that move. It's been a while. That's a long time between wins.
Well, and listen, what the thing that has been very disappointing at Auburn, and the beat writers will quickly tell you this, is they thought they'd be better, A, at quarterback, And they certainly thought they'd be better on the offensive line. And so forth, that is not happening. Now, obviously, Auburn pulling out all the stops for Saturday night on the field and off the field. But this is a humongous game. And Trav, I've heard, I'm curious if you have too. And again, I count this as a rumor. If Georgia was to, if this was an easy game for them, things may not look real good for Hugh in the next week or so.
Well, they shouldn't. I mean, this is year three.
Yes.
And, you know, it's been a gauntlet again. We talked about it earlier in the show in relation to South Carolina. Well, tell it to Alabama. Tell it to Auburn right now.
Really?
Cry me a river, you know, for other teams in this league is going to be the response to that. But, again, offensively, it's just not good enough. It would be one thing if in year three Hugh Freeze was losing games 42-38.
Yeah,
something
right.
Like that.
True.
If you did a coaching staff draft right now of that Auburn coaching staff,
yeah,
who would be your first pick? My first pick, I would think, would be DJ Durkin.
No, absolutely no question. I was going to say the same thing. And Trav, look, let's be honest about this. How many guys would you pick on the offensive side of the ball?
Oh, well, Cam Coleman.
Yeah,
would be up there. And Singleton, I think if you get him enough touches, can be very impactful. But that would be about it on the offensive side of the ball, including the coordinator slash head coach.
Yes, yes.
Or play caller slash head coach in Hugh Freeze. So Auburn at home, I'm going Georgia. I think it helps Auburn that this is, once again, this is kind of like an A&M game. This is kind of like an Oklahoma game. This has the potential to be 20-13.
Yep, I agree.
17-13, something retro-ish like that. But I'm still going to go with the dogs on the road.
Yes.
Laying that 3.5. Let's talk South Carolina at LSU on Saturday night, Brent. Thoughts on the Gamecocks and LSU, both coming off the bye week, right?
Yeah, they really are. What's interesting here? Now, for LSU, Caden Durham, the running back, comes back. He's had a bad ankle with that. Now, how effective is on the North Sellers going to be? Nick Harbor is coming along. Van Jacobs too, but to me the unit on the field that's going to make the difference is the LSU defense in a game like this. I think they could put somewhat of a stranglehold on South Carolina and be able to eke out enough points to be able to win. I think my question for you is, Trav, when is this LSU offense coming around? I know Garrett Nussmeier's probably been banged up. That's been a problem. We mentioned Durham being out. They're okay at running back. I think they've got, on the offensive line, I think they've got wide receivers who frankly could be very good, but just really kind of haven't come through yet. So I think this is a big game for both these teams.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, this is it for both these teams, especially South Carolina. You're already dealing with a couple of conference losses. That ship's priority sailed in terms of preseason expectations and what could have been for this South Carolina team. You know, I think some Alabama fans would be especially worried for South Carolina because of Blake Baker and that LSU defense and the different things he's going to bring. And then Mike Shula. Mike's never been known as an innovator. Of offensive football, a great guy. I think a good football coach. But to sort of combat the undermanned nature other than Sellers and Harbor when he's healthy, that's a problem. Because I don't see South Carolina other than Sellers running the football this week against LSU.
No.
And so then you're going to put it all on Lenore Sellers to perhaps win the game in Heisman-type style. That's what I envision it taking for South Carolina in this game. And the problem is Baker has answers for those kind of guys with his linebackers in his second level defenders.
Well, and to back up what you're saying, South Carolina Trav is last in the SEC in total offense, and the only team in the league that averaged fewer than 100 yards rushing. So that doesn't bode well for the LSU defense to be facing them, does it?
No, and LSU offensively, they've got to get Caden Durham going.
They do,
don't they? Truly healthy. That's the only chance they have, to me, of really being able to make an extended run. And I know Nussmeier and those receivers, and you know, they can do a lot of great things, but if they don't achieve some semblance of balance to help that offensive line and protection, kind of like what we saw with that LSU offense as the season wound down a year ago, it just, it sort of fell apart, and it seemed like Nussmeier had more and more put on him in terms of throwing the football. And he's a capable passer, no doubt, but I don't see him to the point where just down in and down out from the pocket, he can make enough plays from there. Like, and then there's no extension of plays with him. So if it isn't dialed up and he doesn't have what he wants, you know, he's not going to create explosions. I mean, we've seen like a Ty Simpson for Alabama, you know, get outside the pocket or move him by design, like against Vanderbilt last week, got him out on the right corner, pulls up, moves his feet, squares up, delivers a dart to Ryan Williams for a touchdown. That's not Garrett Nussmeier. So LSU should be fine this week, but yeah, they've got plenty of problems of their own on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, absolutely do. That's going to be one of many fascinating games this weekend.
No doubt. Well, Brent, we have worked through the slate here. I'm pretty, we got it.
Because Vanderbilt is off. So they won't be playing. And Trev, help me on this. I think Kentucky is off.
Kentucky is off this week.
Now, look, we need to deal with this real quick.
Mississippi State is off.
They are. Yeah, that's right. Trev, where do you see this Mark Stoops in Kentucky thing going?
Got kind of ugly last week.
It sure did. Reports
of Stoops going to the administration and telling them he was done, and then he wasn't, and asked about it in the post game in Athens. We've talked about it for a long time now, even back in the off season, of how this thing looked like it might be headed, and sort of more than ever feels that way. I didn't think Kentucky was, you know, put forth an embarrassing effort against Georgia. They're just not good enough. I thought Cutter Bowley did some nice things.
He did.
But it just feels like it's reached the station.
Yeah.
At this point and it's been a great run. Hell of a run. 8-9 straight bowl games. I mean, you know, there's stuff that based on the previous standard for Kentucky football, there should be a trophy outside Kroger Field of Mark Stoops, but it does sort of feel inevitable, doesn't it?
And Stoops is making $8.6 million per year, which is you know, they would owe him 75% of his salary. Now they, you know, they'll negotiate that, and they'll both be happy with it. I still think Stoops is a pretty good football coach, frankly. It's kind of run its course at Kentucky. But Trav, again, I tell you, brother, after seeing very little movement last year in the coaching in the SEC by mid to end of November, I won't say it would be drastically different, but we'll see some new faces, won't we?
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky may not want Mark Stoops to go. And if they don't want you to go, then why would they pay you to go when you're the one who wants to go? Well, then go. And then leave that money on the table, Mark.
Yeah, really?
These coaches don't want to do that anymore.
No.
Even if they don't have a gig, they might want to move on. Well, you move on, but you don't move on with the loot, you know? So. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out down the stretch. Well, Brent, it's been a lot of fun. Anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, and the great thing is games this week. on ESPN on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and that's even before you get to Saturday. So that's a lot of fun to be able to see. Ohio State, Illinois, they're playing Indiana at Oregon, which is kind of interesting also too, Michigan and USC. So a lot of interesting things, but Trev, we need a Pops report before we go. Is he behaving and doing okay?
He's doing well. Last check, he's doing well. I got a little trip planned with Pops next month. So
good.
We're going to do some stuff with him, but he's good, man. He didn't go to the Jaguar Chiefs game with us last night. That messes up his, you know, he's watching Gunsmoke.
Oh, sure he is. Absolutely.
He likes to watch those shoot 'em up reruns, you know. So, yeah, he's good. Well, Brent, we'll do it again next week, my friend. Good,
always enjoy it. It's a great week coming up after a lot of teams being off last week.
Absolutely. And hey, Darren chiming in, the Mizzou fan, says, hello, friends. M-I-Z.
Yeah.
D-O-U. It's going to be loud at Farrow Field on Saturday.
I can imagine, yes.
Early kickoff, though.
That's right.
It's the only thing I don't like for Missouri. Well, one of the things I don't like for Missouri, yes. That early kick, 11 local. Mm-hmm. Going to maybe tap it down a little bit. Hey, thanks for watching, everybody. We really appreciate it, either live or as this show archives on the Ryer on YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button right now. And if you'd hit us with a thumbs up, hit Brent and myself with a thumbs up, a like, we'd greatly appreciate that as well. For Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, so long, everybody.